Blog Talk Radio.
Life, love, and wellness.
Necessarily the views held by the network itself. Please use discretion when tuning in. Thank you.
Hey, 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 everybody. It is Tuesday evening. Greetings and welcome to Truthful Tuesday right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And, you know, I get geeked up on Tuesday nights when I go to have the opportunity to be able to host this show, and tonight is no different. We have a panel of dynamic sisters that's going to be bringing us some incredible information, and I've also allowed extra time if we need to go over a little bit on this because we just might. Whew, you know, I'll be out there. I get so excited, and this is such a dear, dear subject to my heart. And these incredible young ladies that's going to be coming before us is just so passionate about the work that they're doing. But before I get into all of that, because, you know, I can get easily off track when I get to introduce my guests for this evening. So let's just take our time and slow up, Sandy. Slow down. Oh. We give thanks to our ancestors. Our ancestors are going to shine through our three speakers today. Tuesday evening is about telling the truth about those things that are hidden. People are afraid to talk about. They whisper about it, point fingers, not having the adequate information. But our ancestors are telling us it's time to stop all of that foolishness and get the truth. So that's what these young ladies are bringing to us tonight. So ancestors, I give thanks. I give thanks that you lead this program, that you're always standing, holding us up on these nights, on Tuesday nights, and that you bring me the best, the best, the best that the universe have with expertise, passion, and compassion for the work that they're doing. So I am so, so thankful. And before we get into our show, I just want to let you know that, audience, you are invited to join in on the discussion tonight. All comments are welcomed, and every voice that would like to be heard shall be heard. And our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. If you would like to speak live on air with us, you can do so by hitting the 1 on your device. You will not be automatically put into the show by calling the number, but if you would like to, you can call in and use the 1 to let us know you want to talk live on air with us. And once I open up your line, I will not close it back down, but I would like for you to make sure that you mute your phone if you're doing something in the background, if you're not speaking, so that our playback quality is the best it can be. A lot of people like to come back and re-listen to the shows again and again, and you could do that too if you would like at www.blogtalkradio.com /Sandy Rodgers, and that's SandyRodgers. So once again, thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us tonight on this magical night as we get filled with so much information from my guests. I'm going to introduce them when we come back in just a moment. We're going to take a quick music break, and I will return shortly. That's called The Power of the Rose, words written by me, performed by my nephew, a.k.a. Amp King. And I just wanted to show that, play that in honor of these queens that's going to be talking to us tonight. The Rose, radiating our spiritual essence. And that's what they bring to us. So welcome back, everyone, to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rodgers Show. And I'm actually going to read the write-up for the show tonight so that we're pretty well grounded and know exactly where we're going with this conversation. So it says, women and HIV and AIDS is our focus, and we've done 3 shows, and this is our 4th show. And this is representing the largest hit population. And we're offering a variety of women and circumstances that can result in someone becoming positively impacted. We have the full panel of women to discuss some very important measures and information in our approach to eradicating HIV and AIDS. Number one, communication with partners. Number two, importance of testing and knowing your status. Never put yourself at risk. Number three, living in denial and include young people in the conversation. Number five, how and where to get additional knowledge. This movement is brought to you to spread light on the impact this epidemic has been on our female populations, families, communities, and ultimately the world. Let's learn from each other. National Women and Girls HIV AIDS Awareness Day was March the 10th, and we want to listen as we begin the conversations on a community health concern that does not seem to improve. So again, welcome to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. This program is I Learn to Walk in the Rain, featuring Tammy Kinney, Sharita Milton, and Antoinette Jones. This is part four of this series, and it has just been such an incredible series that we started back on February the 13th with Tammy, and then Sharita came up next, and we followed up with our last with Antoinette, the end of February. So now we're here. We're celebrating and honoring the National Women and Girls HIV/AIDS Awareness Day, and also to further the dialogue, further sharing the knowledge and the information. So thank you, ladies, for being with us, Tammy, Sharita, and Antoinette. You guys have just been such an incredible lesson for us and blessing to bring us all of this information. So, Tammy, would you like to start off in the discussion for this evening?
Sure, Sandy, and it is always a pleasure to have conversations with you. We've done a lot of work together, and you are a wonderful, wonderful person that brings and shed lights to many different issues on your radio show. So it is an honor that we are on this show tonight, ending a part four series, I Learned to Walk in the Rain. The title came about, I'm always sitting and thinking when my mind allows me to because I'm busy all the time, but I thought about the intersectionality of Black women living with HIV and Black women who are vulnerable to HIV, and what does that look like? So I was thinking, and some of the things people don't focus on, maybe because it feels like it does not concern them, is so many different forms of, I want to use the word metaphor, disconnects, inequality of Black women when it comes to the different services that is provided for women who are vulnerable to a diagnosis of HIV and for women who are diagnosed with HIV. I am a Black woman living, thriving with HIV 36 years, but I was also a Black woman living with HIV, advanced HIV, let me say that, who was an IV drug user, who had an addiction to crack cocaine, finally received, as they say, a clinical diagnosis of mental health. And, you know, that was involved in criminal activities in the past, but all these different things that crossed paths in my life. I looked at my own lens of stigma, and I really thought everybody was looking at me the same way I felt about myself. And this is how the name I Learned to Walk in the Rain came about, because I had to peel away the layers, change how I seen myself as an individual, and grab my power back as a person, as a Black woman, as a human being. I had to let down the umbrella and learn how to walk in the rain. And that means that whatever fear may come my way, I'm able to handle it. I'm able to endure. I'm able to just walk through the rain without fear. So let me go back a little bit. In 2014, I birthed an organization named Rural Women in Action. I became the founder and the executive director of Rural Women in Action because Adrienne Brown, who is now city councilwoman of Walton County, came to me and said, "Tammy, you should form something. You should do something in Winder." And at that time, I was working with various organizations in Atlanta. And I was like, you know, my reply was, "What will I do?" And she was looking at me like, you know, "Really? You know, you're doing this, that, and, you know, this and that with other organizations. And, you know, everybody has a story, but you have a story." And basically shedding light on my life experiences could be a platform to help other women living and thriving with HIV, aging with HIV, and women who are vulnerable to HIV. So this is how the title came about, and this is how is a reflection of the organization Rural Women in Action.
For sharing that history on how this began and your history being so transparent, I could imagine it was perhaps difficult in the beginning to share the truth of your story and to be able to walk in that. And so I understand the title of this program or this movement. That's what I'm calling it. This is a movement. I Learned to Walk in the Rain, because in that you're learning to be expressive with the things that you've had to deal with, and it opens up the way for you to be able to explain your path and your journey. So thank you for that. I love the title. And I believe that this has so many national and international, because this is a learning process with the different speakers that you've put together to bring into this program. It gives an overall understanding of just what's being faced by women, particularly Black women. So I applaud you for the work that you're doing and continue to do. So that's 10 years with Rural Women in Action. Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So let's see. I think I want to switch it around, and I want to bring Antoinette to the mic. And she was actually born with a diagnosis, And then we'll follow up with Sharita, who is a community advocate, activist in Wayshore, right? I mean, she does it all out in the community. So, Antoinette, would you give us a reminder of who you are and what you bring, what experiences you bring to the group, to your trio?
Of course. So I want to echo Ms. Tammy and just thank you and give you your accolade for having this space, having these conversations with folks, and honoring us and recognizing our experiences. I learned to walk in the rain is definitely a testament to my story. I'm Antoinette Jones. I've been living with HIV for 29 years. Like you said, I was born with HIV. And I am honored once again to share this space because intergenerational conversations, intersectional conversations are truly important to me. I love hearing the experiences and the stories of Ms. Tammy and so many other women in the community who got diagnosed, whether in the 80s or the 90s, because it sheds light on how I got to this, how I was diagnosed. Oftentimes, I wondered what caused my own biological mom to become diagnosed, what led up to me being born with HIV. And she shares similar experiences to Ms. Tammy, such as being on drugs at the time, getting a diagnosis, and you know, then giving birth to me. So hearing the stories of women who had their trials and tribulations and, you know, have bloomed and blossomed out of those situations really healed me in my trauma, because there was a time when I was disconnected from my biological mom. I had a lot of resentment towards her because I just couldn't understand. So I blamed her for me being born with this diagnosis. But once I was able to connect with women and hear what they've gone through, what they've had to overcome, it made me more empathetic. It made me understand more everything that she was up against and how I get to live this life, the benefits of living this life, look at it from a different lens. On the last call we had on my episode, I talked about how I entered therapy, and the first time I thought about my HIV diagnosis, I looked at it as a dark cloud. And when we see clouds, we see rain. And I had to learn to walk through that. I had to learn to navigate what my life would be like living with HIV. Would it be a storm? Would it be a treacherous rain? Would I allow it to take over me? Would I allow it to take over my spirit and just not want to go out the house and not want to find or search for sunshine? So with that, I had to search for community. I had to search for people like myself, people who were born with HIV. I had to break through from isolation. And I was able to find other people who were born with HIV who shared my experience. And from that, in 2021, I was able to co-found an organization called Dandelions, Inc. We are accountable for our community to identify as lifetime survivors of HIV, people who have been living with it since birth, their whole entire life. We don't know any other life but HIV. But we also, in Dandelions, in honor of Mary Bowman, we honor our mother who had to walk the path before us, who had to give birth to us for us to live, for us to be here. And we honor how resilient we are, how strong we are together, and how by doing this work, we can be stronger for those who are coming up after us.
Ooh, that was a mouthful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I loved how you began by talking about the intergenerational aspect, because that shows the longevity of this situation within our community. It's been 40 years or more. So, you know, it's not new and it's not going away. And for you to be born with it, with the HIV virus, you have such a beautiful testimony. And I love that you developed and created the Dandelions Inc., which honors your mother and honors those that are in that particular situation with your strength and your power and your resilience, as you stated. So thank you for who you are and what you do. And with that, I want to bring up Sharita, who is a community activist and advocate for people living with HIV and AIDS, particularly Black women. So Sharita, welcome to the call, and give us your strength or your particular power in this this pyramid that we have tonight with you ladies. Sharita, we hear you now.
Okay, so I was on mute. I'm so sorry.
Okay, you cut back out. We don't hear you right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Now, will you repeat what you're saying? I'm sorry.
Oh, I wanted you to come on and share who you are and your role in this triangle that we have, the trio, the dynamic trio is what I'm calling you guys.
Yes, okay. Well, yes, my name is Sharita Milton. I do also thank you for having me again on tonight for tonight's series. The role I actually play in this is that I am a young Black woman who actually does not have a diagnosis of HIV.
Sharita, we can't hear you. Okay. You're going in and out.
And yeah, I'm in the same place as the last session, so I'm not sure. But yeah, but I do play the role of, you know, I'm a Black woman who lives without a diagnosis of HIV.
And your particular function in how this is getting out into the community, the information and the knowledge around the virus.
Yeah, so I work with Ms. Tammy with Rural Women in Action, which is her nonprofit organization, and I kind of just help. I kind of do some of everything. My title itself is the office administrator. However, I'm out there with her. We have these different events, such as our testing events, to where we try to get people out, and it's basically with word of mouth, social media. You have a lot of that, but word of mouth is getting better with getting information out for people to know more about the virus and how to prevent it.
Do you think that the word of mouth is working more efficiently than social media? That is not that is clearer communication, word of mouth.
Yeah, for me, because with word of mouth, I mean, well, anything can get misconstrued, so I guess I can't say that. Everybody is on social media, of course, but it's kind of hard with sometimes with social media, just because people can, you know, it's hard to believe some of the things that people will post. So, of course, if it's coming from a well-known website, of course, like the CDC or something of that nature, then, of course, that's what we see. But a lot of people with just having those random conversations that sometimes you can have over social media, but just to get better understanding, like I say, is to me with word of mouth.
I remember you were talking about on when you came on initially how the progress is extremely slow and that you're just amazed sometimes, and those are my words, with the community not having more information than what it has, and that you feel like, you know, that's the space for you where you would fill in and be of the most help to the entire community.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. And like I said, I know, you know, that's the end goal, of course, is to end with the epidemic. However, it's just, like I said, people, they feel if it's not interesting to them, or if it doesn't just, if it's not them, then they don't, they're not gravitated to wanting to know the information, whereas we should be open regardless if we have a diagnosis or not, because, of course, if we don't, then we want to keep up and know the information to prevent us from having a diagnosis in the future. But it's just something that, you know, people of my in my generation is just something that's just not talked about enough.
And what's the, do you know the stats on your generation as far as the number of new cases that have come about, say, like for 2023? And I know it's pretty new, so you may have to give us something that's later than that or earlier than that. But do you have any stats on the number of new infections in your age group?
Not offhand.
Okay.
I know it was something we kind of like briefly discussed last time, and I did not get those accurate numbers.
Oh, it's not an issue. I just was wondering if you had it. I just would be curious as to, you know, what it reflects. And, you know, is your generation as impacted or affected as much as the other age groups? So that's all. It's okay. So I want to thank each one of you, and I appreciate your willingness to be here and to continue this conversation of exploring ways that we can make a difference or increase the knowledge in the community, not just by this radio program, but by what each person that's listening in, what they can do, what they can take back to their families, to their circle of friends, to the office, or wherever it would be possible to have these conversations. And so I want to start back over with Tammy. Tammy, what kind of work have you done with Rural Women in Action that has impacted a person's knowledge of the virus? Tammy, can you hear me?
Yes, Sandy. Let me go back to the question, if you don't mind, that you asked Sharita about the stats on young people. I do know 20%, in 2020, 20% of young people, they were diagnosed with HIV. I do know one in every six women has a diagnosis of HIV. Black women is the highest rate, and the populations are from 18 to 35, and then we have our seasoned women, 35 to 55, maybe a little older in the 2023 stats. So going on to the work that Rural Women in Action has done, in the early days, we focused on the different vulnerabilities that women face when it came to HIV or receiving an HIV diagnosis or transmitting HIV. We talked about many different women with lived experiences. We talked about domestic violence. We talked about drug addiction, and we talked about mental health. We talked about intimate partner violence. We talked about all these different things that played a part, may and may not have played a part, in women receiving the diagnosis. And quickly, I will explain that. In addiction, we all know when an individual is addicted to drugs, I'm going to use drugs because addiction can mean many different things. You're not thinking correctly. You are under the influence, and your decision-making is not clear at all. And under the influence of drugs, it's a great possibility a person would have unprotected sex. If a person is an IV drug user, and this is where the intersectionality, all of this come in. If you are not educated on how HIV is transmitted, if you are an IV drug user, and especially a heroin drug user, you may share needles without even thinking about the fact that I'm using a needle behind somebody else that may have a diagnosis of HIV or hepatitis C.
Mm-hmm.
Being in a domestic violence relationship, a person, man or woman, can be forced to have unprotected sex, even in a relationship. If it's a domestic violence relationship or intimate partner violence relationship. And people with different disabilities and clinically diagnosed with a mental health issue, so many things can happen on that level to where a person may not understand the education and the awareness of HIV and can be taken advantage of. So it's so many intersectionalities that comes with a person being vulnerable to HIV. And that's why Rural Women in Action will continue to bring education and awareness to empower and transform the minds of people when it comes to HIV. We constantly do HIV testing. We have signature events where multiple vendors come together and share their knowledge on mental health, nutrition, HIV resources. Because this is a community concern. It's not a one-person concern. And what I mean by that, Sandy, is I'm a woman living with HIV, so I should bear the burden of everything that comes along with it. This is a community concern. And as black folks and black women, for me, I have an obligation and a charge to educate the communities, not only the communities that I live in, but other surrounding communities and whatever platform that I am invited to or platforms that I create. So I remember in the early days of Rural Women in Action, you had a platform for young people, which that platform was education on different levels to open their minds with different activities, which was so great. You really did some inspiring work with our young people. And we will be showing some of those events on our 10th anniversary of Rural Women in Action. But we mainly want to be able to do testing, know your status. Is very, very important. And that way, when you know your status, when you are engaging in relationships, and when that time is right, you know how to share your status, or getting tested, you empower other people to get tested. So we basically focus on getting tested, know your status, knowing how to live through a diagnosis of HIV, and also working on prevention for women of the, because we do have tools in the toolbox, Sandy. We have condoms. We have a toolbox. And, you know, in certain areas like the Deep South, rural area, where education is needed, we got condoms. Well, we got education and awareness in the toolbox. And I'm going back to share something that Sharita said. It is still some misconceptions out there on how HIV is transmitted. So that's where we go into the toolbox and we pull out education and awareness. And then we have condoms. A lot of men and women do not know how to effectively have condom conversations. I remember in the early days of Rural Women in Action, we would have those conversations, those condom conversations, healthy love parties that one of our ladies out of Atlanta would come down and do. And then we have PrEP. PrEP is a medication that individuals use to prevent the spread of HIV. For those who are in a relationship with someone that has an HIV diagnosis, those individuals who just say no to condoms, those individuals who may be sex workers, those individuals who have made a decision that it's going to be I'm going to be in a relationship because I love this person, or because this is the person I want to have sexual pleasure with, PrEP is for me. PrEP for everybody, but PrEP is also in the toolbox. So we have tools to work with. We need to make sure that everybody has access to the tools. And that is what Rural Women, we do our best to provide the tools to the community.
You basically work in the rural area. Is that correct, Tammy?
That is correct. That was a passion. You know, I lived in Atlanta for about almost 30-something years. But the desire, once I realized that I needed to educate my community, and when I say my community, Sandy, where I came from, where I was birthed at, and that is in the rural community. And it was just laid on my heart spiritually that this was my charge to do so. So in coming back to Winder, I was still skeptical how people would feel about me. So now I'm looking at my own lens about my own self, and I'm thinking people are looking at me the same way. So a couple events changed in my life to where I did a interview, and it was national. And I disclosed my status on TV. And that was I could really breathe then. And that's when I realized I can walk in the rain without the umbrella. And I can get a good night's sleep knowing that I was clear about my status, you know. And my objective is being clear and transparent, hoping that I would help the next young man, the next young woman or seasoned woman by sharing my strength, hope, and experience so no one else would have a diagnosis of HIV.
And, you know, you were very strong in your introduction of yourself. I mean, really, really strong. in your full transparency of the activities that you engaged in to have that diagnosis. And so I thank you for that, and I thank you for the work that you're doing, not just in rural Georgia, but throughout the world, because you've been everywhere, just Africa and Canada and down into the Caribbean islands and things, and spreading the knowledge. And so I thoroughly, thoroughly appreciate that. And I wanted to ask you, do you think there's a difference between how you approach your educational process there in rural Georgia as you would, say, like in Atlanta? Because I know you do work here in Atlanta as well.
I think the difference is, it's not that much of a difference, but it's in the rural area, is that I really want people to see me before they see the diagnosis when I'm speaking to a group of people. Don't see the diagnosis. See me. See, and I think sometimes the problem or the thought process of other people, they see the diagnosis. They don't see who that individual really is. Mm-hmm. And that plays a major part in relationships as well. Throughout my diagnosis, I had a man to ask me, was I happy? And in my mind, I thought he was referring to, am I happy? You know, I was in recovery. I met this gentleman in recovery. He was a very great, brilliant guy, but we were both in recovery.
Right.
So I thought he was referring to the recovery, but he was actually asking me, was I happy because of my diagnosis? And I'm, and you know, when he broke it down to me, I was like, well, am I supposed to be really sad? I'm saying this to myself. And that was like, and the end game of that story was he desired to have a relationship with me. And he didn't know what that would look like for him, if his family found out, if his friends, you know. So for him, it was like, am I okay with my diagnosis? And then actually in a roundabout way, he was asking himself, could he be happy with me?
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So sometimes, you know, you really got to see the person before you see the diagnosis.
You know, you bring up a good point. Yeah, because I remember in working with a couple of the groups here, support groups here in Atlanta, is that the person would say that they would wait. You know, they didn't tell someone right off the bat what their status was, that they would wait, you know, and kind of figure out if it's going to be a long-lasting relationship. And that was when, you know, once they made that decision, you know, and the person was found to be trustworthy, so to speak, you know, that they would share. And so it makes sense that you would want the person to get to know you prior to finding out. So good point that you brought up there. Thank you for that.
And I do want to add the strength. I know Sherita didn't say it. I don't know why she's a little shy tonight. But Sherita brings a different look to the rural women in action, because she is a young black woman that is not diagnosed with HIV. And the misconception of being in the presence of an organization, working with an organization, that represents HIV and other comorbidities, right? Sometimes people think that she has a diagnosis.
Right, right.
So I'm just saying it's still a lot of stigma, and that's a strength that has working with Rural Women in Action, because she can get educated. She does educate herself, and she does receive education through Rural Women in Action, where stigma is still, you know, sitting in the front row. You know, people mm-hmm. are asking her or assuming she's a woman living with HIV because she's a part of an organization that represents and have conversations about HIV, right? So
right.
they're not looking at her. They're looking at, and that's what they say,
Yep.
Does Sherita have a diagnosis? So she can empower people her age that this is a community issue. This is a community concern. Everybody needs to be educated, especially black women and black young girls, young adults. And that's why Black History Month, National Women and Girls HIV and AIDS Awareness Day, and being on a platform with one of the dandelions, Antoinette Jones, is brilliant. So I think the combination of women, the diverse, a seasoned person as myself, and two young adults, this platform couldn't have been a better group of women on National Women and Girls HIV and AIDS Awareness Day on your platform, Sandy. And I'm just so proud that they accepted the invitation to be a part of the segment.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy that you're with us, truly, truly, because I know, and I want to call Sherita back to the mic, because I know when I was volunteering for the years that I was involved, I believe a lot of people probably had that same misconception that you're talking about, you know, that I must have been positive as well. I don't think I ever had anyone to approach me like that, but you know, them eyebrows be going up and they be looking at your side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But Sherita, come back up for me, please, and talk about the difference, if you see any difference, with approaching the younger generation than with the older generation in reference to having that discussion about the importance of knowing your status.
Well, when it comes to having those discussions with the different age groups, I guess to say, like I said earlier, of course, with the generation, the young generation now, if it's not it, even if it's not part of what they say the trending topic is, then they really don't care to really be engaged. It's more of a trying to just, you got to peel back those layers just to try to get the conversation out of them. But however, when it comes to the older women, of course, a lot of them are pretty much at, you know, premenopausal stage. A lot of them are either have been married for several decades, if not years. And so with them, the conversation is very different because I see it being approached as, you know, I don't need to talk about this. You know, I'm married, or I'm not even having sex out here. And like Ms. Tammy said, you know, having sex isn't the only way to actually contract HIV. And so it's still just important to talk and have those conversations because you never know. And so while we were talking, I was just trying to still look up some stats because I know we were still trying to figure out. And so what I did find with the UNICEF, which is the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, from the 2022 stats alone, they're stating that There were 480,000 young people between the ages of 10 to 24 who were newly infected with HIV, of whom 140,000 were adolescents between the ages of 10 and 19. And then looking back in 2019, that they were saying that women, the new cases were actually attributed to heterosexual contact. So these are women who were, you know, assuming that they were having monogamous relationships with just one person, and they were actually the ones that were contracting the new cases. So, like I said, it's just trying to get out there. And like I said, I know with a lot of people that are young on social media, I have a niece that's 8 years old that can that be teaching me stuff off of TikTok that I didn't know, you know, that you can do on there. So I know it gets their attention and it keeps their attention. But because so many things on social media or, you know, on TV can just not be truthful information. It just takes one person or one group of people to put false information out to where you don't know what's real or what's fake. Whereas when you just having those conversations, you know, word of mouth or face-to-face, you can have it where, you know, if it's something like right now, we didn't know at first those stats, we were able to do it as a group to look up those stats to find those answers, and then we can show if this is where I got it from this website, which is credible, and you can see how I found that information, and then once I teach you, then you can have that conversation with other people, and then so forth and so on to where right now here we are. A lot of people are getting more information out and learning more information than they have before just by having those difficult conversations in person.
Thank you for that. You know, and there's also blood transfusions. I know they're a lot different or safer now, I believe. Let me add that to it. I believe. But people were contracting the virus as, you know, through blood transfusion. I actually know a person, you know, that did. So, and it's normally, or with the ones that I know personally, it's not just the HIV, it's the full-blown AIDS that they get through the transfusion for some strange reason. I've never figured that one out. So, but I appreciate you for talking about the giving us the stats for one thing, but also talking about the differences between the generations or the age groups. I know these children are, man, they come out just brilliant with using that technology. I'm always surprised. I really, truly, truly, truly appreciate you for the work and your contributions to the community, for your devotion to helping people to understand and getting that communication out. Truly, truly. Antoinette, would you talk to us about the work that you're doing with the Dandelions Incorporated and how do you find those individuals that were actually born with the diagnosis? And what are the special issues that your population has had to deal with?
Yeah, this is a good question. So we deal with a lot of issues, and I love that Sherita Edmiston shared statistics as far as Black women and young women. I started my journey in advocacy through prevention work, so I was a tester and counselor. I was a peer navigator. I was educating young people specifically about their risk of contracting HIV. One thing I heard over the weekend from an event I went to was, we are in a space with people who are HIV positive, but there is always, to the women who are not, you can always be HIV possible. And Kennedy from Lotus, another organization out here in Atlanta, said that. And it really stuck with me because I thought about why it's important for young people to test. And we live in a state that's abstinence only. How problematic that can be when we are trying to get into the school system to these young people who are so moving so quickly in this world, trying to navigate so much and wanting to know so much about sex and sexuality. And that's why I found my passion. I had to transition from doing prevention work, which is always going to be a need for prevention, whether it's HIV or other STIs or other things in this world that people fall victim to moving into direct services for women living with HIV. And that looked like supportive services and people born with HIV. I started to do that because of my own isolation. So my community as a whole, isolation, mental health issues such as depression, anxiety. We deal with resentment, as I mentioned. We deal with a lot of grief. A lot of us in our community have lost people from HIV, whether it's peers, people that we know in our age group living with HIV, born with HIV, or our own parents have transitioned from this earth because of their HIV diagnosis or their advanced stage HIV. So we deal with a lot, let alone not being recognized or included in a lot of the conversations about HIV. We are having to fight for a seat at the table. We're having to fight for inclusion in research. We're having to fight for acknowledgement that we are even here and we're breathing, that people born with HIV still happening. And it may not be as prominent as it was in 1980s, 1990s, but it still does happen. We literally had two births in Georgia this past year. And it's so unfortunate, but I'm thinking about 20 years from now, where those young people will be. What community support will they have? And I'm hoping and I'm praying that Dandelions will sustain itself for 10 years, like Rural Women in Action, for 20 years, like many of the organizations we see serving community here in Georgia, so that those kids who are still being born have a space and community to go to so that they don't have to fight for the same things that we've had to fight for that we're missing. I mentioned them sharing the stats because I wanted to share a few stats of my own. And like I said, we know that there's been a reduce in transmission from mother to child or parent to child. The first case of mother to child transmission was in 1983. Not a lot of people know that. Like they only think that men were getting diagnosed in the 80s. And of course, a first black woman came out diagnosed come a black child. So that was the first time you see a black or a child get diagnosed with HIV and come on the scene. And then by 1993, an estimate of 15,000 HIV children were diagnosed in the U.S. By 1994, we've seen AZT come on the scene, so we saw the reduction in transmission, but it was still happening. And then in 1998, that's when the global epidemic was having an impact on the health and survival of children. So that's when it was like, oh, wait, we see babies being born. What do we do about it? And they actually was trying to think of ways to protect the women and prevent the transmission. And one other stat that I want to share, because this is very recent, 2022 was not that long ago. So out of the estimated 624,000 people who unfortunately transitioned off this earth in 2022 from AIDS-related illnesses, 16% of them, which is 67,000 of them, were children under the age of 20 years old. That's a lot of dandelions and lifetime survivors that we're losing. And it's because of the system. It's because of the lack of services. It's because of the isolation. It's because we're afraid to go to the doctor. It's because we're afraid to take our medicines around people that we are in high school with, people that we know may share our status because we're young. But now we are aging, we're growing, and we're demanding, we're expressing all of these things, all of these issues, all of these our life experiences that we have been through. And I think that's really, really important for when we think about why we are all here right now, like how we got to this work, why we are sharing our stories. Because without sharing our stories, no one will know we exist. So, and I love that you mentioned blood transfusion, Sandy, because we at Dandelions and our Lifetime Survivors community, we recognize that blood transfusion was a prominent way, a large way, that many babies got diagnosed with HIV. In California, there was over 200 babies who received a blood transfusion and was diagnosed. Oh. Because they were testing the blood at that time, and this was in 1980s.
Right.
So, like we know now, you know, they test the blood. You're not allowed to donate blood if you're living with HIV. But there was a time when babies were contracting it from mother to child, contracting it from breast milk because people didn't know you wasn't supposed to breastfeed, and from blood transfusion, which was a medical error. So all of these things have advanced, and we're grateful for that, but they still need to be talked about so we can know how we can move forward. And I'm going to be complete with that because I don't know if y'all hear my baby getting a little rowdy.
I was going to make an announcement, everyone that's listening. So Antoinette have a beautiful, I believe she's 2 years old, baby girl. And as we can tell, she's pretty active, and she was born not positive, without the diagnosis. So Aunt Antoinette has also breastfed her baby, and she sounds pretty healthy and lively to me. So thank you for being able to share that, and bless baby girl and you. So I want to ask a question to the whole group, and whatever you come up with is perfectly acceptable. I would say go to your wildest dream after this. But what type of program do you think could be created that would grab the attention of the community? What type of program? Would it be something TikTok? Would it be having discussions on live on Facebook or Instagram? Or is it, you know, having community events? What exactly? I'm going to give you a minute to think about it a little bit. How can the community, and perhaps Sharita would be best to answer since she does most of her work out to start the answer process, since she does so much of the work out in the community. Have any thoughts on that, you guys?
Sandy, I think having, as you say, and I like how you worded it, a movement of women who became the artists of their life through storytelling and removing their internal stigma. Storytelling, everybody got a story. And we know women who have been consistently telling their stories and bringing more into the stories, because I am a firm believer you don't give everybody everything at one time.
Right.
Because that can be impossible, because as we evolve or revolve, experiences keep coming into our lives. But having a movement of women coming together that does not have a diagnosis, standing beside women who do have a diagnosis, because I say to myself, when I'm in different spaces or I just verbally say it, I was too once not living with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of us woke up and said 15, 20 years, 30 years down the road, I'm going to be a woman living with HIV.
Right.
So through all of that, from the time, I'm just going to say 12, I'm just using that because we do know that young girls at the age of 12 have received an HIV diagnosis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Up until whatever the age is, become diagnosis. What happened in that journey? You know, what were the disparities that we as women faced? And I think the recognition of National Women's and Girls HIV Awareness is shining light on who we really are within our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Sherita and Antoinette both, heterosexual transmission. Everybody think, because I've been married 55 years or 25 years or even 10 years, what we don't look at is a person can be diagnosed or having a diagnosis of HIV and it's dormant in the body. So you never, a person very well could be diagnosed before the marriage. I've had some individuals who have had that experiences, right? So
I think
having a movement where we can change the narrative, the negative narrative of HIV, and for stigma-related language, we use the word advanced HIV because all I knew back in the day was AIDS.
Okay.
People were using AIDS. People were using full-blown, and that was based in disclosure and all of that. So changing the language to make it more acceptable, less stigmatizing to people living and thriving and just, you know, living their best life with HIV. You know, we went from AIDS to full-blown AIDS to advanced HIV, which means you go to the doctor more, maybe every 3 months, maybe once every 2 months with the advanced HIV. But I think a movement, Sandy.
Okay.
You know, reducing the stigma.
Because that movement can include a lot of different actions and activities. And I like what you're saying about changing the language so that it's not such a put-off type of conversation to be involved in, but one that would invite a person in to learning and discovering, you know, what the real deal is.
And if I can add, I guess, to that, because one, I guess with me, being that I try to help be the voice for some of the younger generation, one of the things with me is basically just trying to find ways to get them engaged. And again, if you think of that, so it's kind of the way I look at it, it's like when you feed a kid some medicine through food, where they think they're getting, or through a treat, where they think they're getting a treat, but they're also getting something important because they're getting the medicine as well. And so back in 2022, Ms. Tammy allowed me to do we did a brunch for sexual wellness, and it was kind of, you know, I put it in the newspaper in my county where I'm from, which is Crawfordville, Georgia, is a small community. And we invited people out. We cooked a brunch, so we had brunch for them to eat. And what we did, we played a game. We played a game called Sex Jeopardy. And I had some young adults there that helped me. You know, we had it. I had it all with a projector. We had the real Jeopardy music. Everybody had fun. And what I noticed was that the young ladies who were helping me actually were taking a part in some of the questions. And with each question that we asked, and we did it right in the style of Jeopardy, because, like, some of the topics was, of course, myths and misconceptions. We had, like, modes of contraception, just different things, and they would choose. And so when they say the answer, what I liked about it, we had where it gave some facts about it. And so, like, one of the answers, it might have been condoms, but then it told us why it was proven to be the answer. And so I noticed at the end, like, the ones that I didn't think would be engaged were actually the one that did most of the involvement in the conversation. So just trying to find ways to get them, you know, to be engaged and interact kind of is what I kind of look try to get done, so that it's something fun, something that they remember, something that they can, you know, because I still see people who ask me, oh, when the next time you're doing another event? Oh, I had fun the last time. And, I mean, we were talking about preventing HIV, using condoms properly, things that you wouldn't think people at certain ages would want to talk about freely, but they did. They enjoyed the environment. It was like a safe space, nothing that we talked about. Even, you know, we had the conversation, you know, like if there's something that you want to discuss that you don't want anybody to know, it's a conversation that you don't feel is for the group, you know, just pull me aside. Let me know. I might not find the, you know, have the answer for you, but Rural Women actually does have resources to get to someone that can get the answer for you or get the information that you need or the resources that you need to get the support that you need to do better in life.
People were able to be actively involved in the learning because I know personally that when we have this talking at, you know, like just kind of regurgitating the numbers and the figures, and people are expected just to sit and to listen, that is not always effective because you're going to lose the attention. You're going to lose, you know, people's mind kind of drift off into, you know, what they need to stop at the store and buy on their way after the event is over and all of like that. So to have it where they're involved and you created a game, that's genius. I love that. I love that. And that could be for everyone.
And it was because, you know, families, you know, my mom, she's in age, of course, but I don't recall her sitting around having those type of conversations with her aunts or with her mother. So it was just, it was cool because I had my mom, I had a great aunt that was even there, and it was just like we were all having this open conversation that I'm pretty sure had it been years ago, that wouldn't have happened. Because, you know, at a certain age, you're not allowed to have those adult conversations with the rest of the adults. You knew your place. You go, you sit down. But now we're to have those conversations, those difficult conversations, and it's not a problem because we're all learning together.
Yep, yep. It's a beautiful thing to be in this age.
Yes.
Real, yep. So, Antoinette, do you have anything to add? What would you think would be the best type of program, or what type of energy should be put where would grab the attention of others, you know, people that we're wanting to get the information to? How will we go about doing that?
Yes, so one thing that I carry with me, and it's something that my mentor, Masania, said, is you build it for them, they come, but you build it with them, and they'll stay. And I carry that mantra with me because from my experience, when you involve community from the very beginning, they stay to the end. They actually feel like you are hearing them, you are listening to what they need, and you're prioritizing them, especially when we talk about young people who are often ignored, not listened to, told to stay in a child's place. Young people do have insight and a voice. I remember when I worked at a community-based organization, we organized a summit for young people. And majority of the folks who were trying to organize it was not young. So the two young people on staff, myself and another young woman, was like, the reason that this will not be successful is because we don't have any other young people here planning it with us. If we involve them in the planning process, they will feel heard. They will feel like their needs are being met. We will make sure that what young people are going after, what they are interested in, resonates in the space. And I use that mantra in a lot of the things that I do, whether it's conversation with community, whether it's trying to create programs for community. I try to involve the folks who I know will be the most impacted. A lot of folks don't do this. Our legislators do not do this. Politicians do not do this when they make decisions for us without consulting with us. It starts at a young age, and women, especially us as Black women, we want to be consulted. We want to be involved. We want to have decision-making power. We want to have autonomy over what is being done. Don't plan something for a Black woman and not involve us from the very beginning. So right. That's how I feel anything that you do, anything that you want to do for community sake, for the sake of an organization, you have to involve community. Get their input in some way, shape, or form, whether it's through surveys, whether it's through informational sessions, listening sessions. The needs are. Needs change from generation to generation. So 10 years from now, I'm not going to know what another young person needs. It's going to be so different. The only way for me to even create the reality that they may want is to ask them. So that's what I think as far as how programs can really like just go off with a success, how we can involve community, how we can continue this work within community, and make sure that folks' needs are being met and that they feel and that they are being heard.
Thank you. That's actually extremely, extremely helpful and important in the creation of whatever this program would be, that we would use, and I say we because I'm including myself in it, because it's such an important activity, as Tammy said, a movement within the community. That means that there's no stopping it, you know, that it keeps going and going, and including the points that Antoinette and Sharita offered to the building of this movement, I think that would just be so incredible and so impactful for everyone concerned. It's like everybody have their hands on it, you know, in some kind of way. And that is the way to have something that will grab the attention. Like Antoinette was just saying, you know, like you bring it and people have a way, have involvement, rather, in the building of it, then they take ownership of it, you know. So very, very good. Very good. Tammy, what you got on the horizon for your continuous work in the community?
I think, and I have to get with, you know, the board of Rural Women in Action, and the, you know, we have to have a sit down, because what I would like to see Rural Women in Action continuing going into 2024 with our signature conference, the Black Excellence. Mm. And the Black Excellence Conference is where all vendors, black vendors, white vendors, but it's the excellence that black folks have that don't often get displayed, especially in rural communities. That means that everybody has something to bring to the table that can contribute to the well-being, the whole health of people living with HIV, and they probably don't even know it. We had vendors such as Be Kind to Your Mind, Melissa Holton, Kenny. We had young girls who made their own products, their own healthy drinks. And I think Sharita does candles, you know, because we also need to take a look at our mental health. What do we need to sustain or maintain? Not stabilize, but do maintenance on our mental health. I would like for Rural Women to Action to grow its Black Excellence Conference within the community. I would also like to see Rural Women in Action different chapters where women can do different events up under the mission of Rural Women in Action in different rural counties. And that would be a plus. That's what I would like to see moving forward with Rural Women in Action, continuing the work up under our four pillars, which is HIV, hepatitis C, domestic violence, mental health, and reoccurring substance use disorder. And with the work that we're doing now, you know, people know who we are. We do believe in collaboration, because we cannot do this work alone. We do not have all of the answers, but collaboration is a key. It takes, as they say, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes other community collaborators to engage in reducing new HIV transmission. One of the quotes that I really like that I use so often is the one by Dr. Martin Luther King. Our lives begin to end the day that we become silent about things that matter.
Yes,
and as
we know,
this epidemic is a pandemic, it's global, and it affects people of color, black folks all across the world. And we need to be transparent about that, and we need to provide services and information and storytelling in hope to save the lives of others. We can't sit back and be silent and not educate our young people. We can't sit back and be silent without and don't educate seasoned individuals. As we all know, that transmission is greater in the heterosexual population, because people seem to think that, number one, it's not going to happen to me because you know, I've been with this guy or I've been with this woman so many years, you know, I know my partner. Or it's where somebody in their mind truly believes that I would never have on potato sex. And we know that's not, that can't be true because of the different hardships and lack of resources that people face when their back is up against the wall and decisions have to be made. We got to learn how to use resources and not be afraid to use resources. You know, and it has to be a movement to where we say this has got to stop. We must stop new infections, new transmissions of HIV, and focus on whole health, not only HIV, but mental health and other comorbidities that people who are living with HIV and people who are not living with HIV. As Paul Kawada says at the closing of his emails, yours in the struggle. It is a struggle. You know, sometimes, you know, we say that we are well. No, let me go back. We say that we are whole. Well, as a woman living with HIV, I would consider myself being well. I'm not totally whole because it's days that I don't want to take my medication. It's days that I say to myself, what if? Oh, what would my life be like if I didn't have a diagnosis? See, I have to be transparent when it's time to be transparent with my feelings and my emotions, and I can't glamorize it to the point to where I'm sending a false message. It's some days I look at my medication and I'm like, and I do say, well, why me? But then I can come back and answer that question because I do take full responsibility of my lifestyle, right? But Real Women in Action want to continue to be transparent. And our signature line is information plus transformation equals empowerment. When we give that information out to the community to empower the next person, that's a great thing. Even if it's one person a month that we can change, that person can continue to change somebody else. We are an organization that can sit at the dinner table with you and have real conversations. That was a mouthful right there.
That was beautiful. That sounded like it came straight out your heart. So that was fabulous. So and thank you, Tammy. That was absolutely touching. Mind expanding. And soul stirring, because you went into so many different avenues that all comes back to that intersectionality, you know.
Yeah.
I liked the different components that you include in your program, especially the Black Excellence. And getting that out and making sure that information is spread to additional rural communities and things like that. But I just want to touch on, because this was a little new to me and I wasn't really prepared for you to say that the greatest transmission is in the heterosexual sector.
Yes. Yes.
That's incredible.
And see, in my mind and in my thoughts, and I would like for Antoinette and Sherita to chime in on this, is because when we talk about or when we're having sex or the desire to have sex, the pleasure, the intimacy, all that that comes with it, for a lot of us, we don't look at, we don't have the conversation to the person we want to have pleasure with about condoms and diagnosis, because I'm coming from the perspective as pleasure in someone's life, feeling needed and wanted in the sexual way. And that's a powerful thing, and people don't want to look at that.
Right.
It was a post, last year, maybe year before last, which would you rather have, money or sex? And personally, I chose sex because I can go to work and get my own money for the things that I like to have.
Right, right.
And the things that I like to have, my partner or my mate or somebody that I'm seeing may can't afford it, number one, may see no need for me to have it, number two, and just may not want to buy it, number three. But now if we have a sexual, pleasurable connection, I am really good with that. But are people having conversations about condoms? See, now in my life, I'm not afraid to share my status because I'm giving the person the opportunity to say, nay, yay, I don't want to, I'm afraid, I don't want to be involved with a woman that has all these things, right? And I love myself enough to say, okay. When back in the day, rejection didn't sit well with me because it made me feel a certain kind of way about me.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and having said all of that, that's all I can say, sadly. You know,
conversation is excellent because it's given us all those moments, you know, to just kind of sit in what we're thinking, and it could be thoughts that we had never considered before. So I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So I would like to ask Sherita and Antoinette, if you would like to add on to what Miss Tammy was saying, or if you have anything that you would like to add to our benefit, our upliftment in this conversation, you may do so now.
Well, I guess if I can chime in again, when Ms. Tammy was, you know, talking about, you know, having intimacy with, like, with the heterosexual women. And so one of the things that I kind of can think of is, like, you know, when we have those conversations, you think of sex. When you think of sex, that's what you think of. But there's a lot of other things that come with pleasure when it comes to sex. Oral is being one of those. And so it's like you have to still be cautious and careful because you're thinking you're protecting yourself because, oh, I'm having sex, but I'm having protective. You know, I'm using protection. But are you using protection in all areas? Because,
okay,
you know, if you are having oral sex, even though it's rare, you still have to think about that person. You don't know them, so who's to say, you know, they don't have sores for something else or other STDs that they weren't aware about, bleeding gums, just bad oral care themselves. So, you know, it's just a lot to think about. So when you do think of sex, you got to think of everything that comes along with it, because we think one thing, oh, we're protecting ourselves in one area, but we're still leaving ourselves vulnerable in another.
Wow.
Mm.
All right. Y'all heard it. Y'all heard it right here on the Sandy Rogers Show, Life, Love, and Wellness. Thank you, thank you, thank you for that.
Yes, thank you. I love what both women shared. I would just add breaking down your own stigma. It's National Women and Girls HIV and AIDS Awareness Day, Awareness Week. And it's not just about those living with, it's those who could contract an HIV possible. So break down your internal stigma. Go get tested. Talk to your children about HIV. Talk to your children about sex and pleasure. Talk to your family, period, older adults, younger adults, seasoned adults. It doesn't matter the age group, but especially Black women, have the conversations. It's very important for our health, very important for our families. We carry a lot. We wear everything on our shoulders. We are the matriarchs of our families, so we must take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others.
Ooh, out of the miles of beige. Thank you so much, Jeanette. Ms. Tammy, I'm going to come back around to you. You got anything, darling?
I think this celebrating all across the country, National Women and Girls HIV Awareness Day is very important for all women. I think that it recognizes the endurance, the power, the strength that not only long-term survivors, but those who are newly diagnosed and those who are in the struggle to change policies and laws, and even to make changes in their own lives to reduce internal stigma and to play a part in educating and bringing awareness to our communities, to help save our communities, because I do believe that we can lower the transmission rate among Black women, Black young girls, and just everybody. I do believe that that can happen. So I just want to thank Antoinette Jones. I want to thank Sherita Milton for partaking and accepting the invitation to be a part of I Learn to Walk in the Rain. And I thank you so much, Sandy, for allowing us to be on your show to close out this segment of National HIV AIDS Awareness Day for women and girls. So we are so honored, and we hope to take this I Learned to Walk in the Rain to another level and make it a movement.
Love it. Love it. I appreciate your comments, and I am overjoyed with your willingness to come on and be so transparent with your lives, thus educating the audience and those that will listen to this in the future, because the key word that I heard from each one of you was communicate, and that communication is pivotal and making a difference, because if we never talk about it, if this conversation stops right here, then it's been nice and it's been a lot of information shared, but if it's reduced to just four people, then it's not big enough, you know? So with this platform, we're able to really reach people around the world, and I am just so honored. So honored to have you ladies to come and to spend your time, and especially Antoinette and the baby, you know, like to be a part of this into these long extended hours. So I appreciate you. I thank God for you, and I pray nothing but the best for you as you go along. And we are the audience, the family of Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Just wanted to show you some appreciation. Take that information. We're just, I mean, the applause will never stop. And so continue doing what you're doing. Let me know how I can help in the future with your expansion or your movement, how that's going to look. And I'm here for you to support you. And thank you so much, Antoinette, Dorita, and Tammy. We love you guys and are very, very enriched by the knowledge that you share with us today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And audience, I'll see you guys next week. New show, new speakers, and keep in mind, I learned to walk in the rain. All right, good night, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much.